Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the 310th edition, kicking off the ninth season of the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast. Once again, I'm Matt Perkins. Today, no coach. He is off at camp, as most coaches are. This time of year, he's up at Austin Peay with the Governors. Nonetheless, we are here with Josh Cook up there in the Windy City. Josh, great to see you, buddy.
Ooh, it's good to be back, starting another season. For those of you who are choosing to watch the podcast, I will apologize for my disgusting appearance. It is absurdly humid here, and I just got back walking the dog. And you know what? I'm sweating as much as the Pac-12 commissioner is right now.
Oh, I was going to say you're glistening, Josh. You're glistening. So we are starting off our conference previews here today with the Pac-12 and the Mountain West. We're going to do doing things a little bit differently here this year for our conference previews. Coach and I have decided to let Josh take the wheel and see where that takes us. So, you know, fingers crossed and pray for us if you are someone who prays. And we'll see if we can land that boat. Before we get into it, though, got to remind you guys that we are still presented by betonline.ag, where they continue to be your number one source for all of your online sports wagering needs. You name it, they've got it over there at BetOnline. Use your mobile device, head on over to the website, sign up today, get a 50% welcome bonus using our promo code BELIEVE, that's BLEAV, on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. Also, shout out to MikeFarrellSports.com, where you can be watching this as well. Josh, let's just get right into it. It's Pac-12 time. We're starting our conference previews off going west to east. And, you know, everyone else does east to west. Let's go west to east. Why not? We'll start in the Pac-12, and I'm going to cede the floor to you and let you take the wheel.
Yeah. Oh, my co-hosts are just some lazy sacks of potatoes right now. I have to do everything. For those of you that don't remember anything about last football season, the Pac-12 had no national title contender outside of USC peaking at number four. But based on their defense, even if they had made the playoffs, I don't think they were beating Michigan, Georgia, or Ohio State. So no true contender. But USC did go 8-1 last year, and they made the title game. Behind them were three 7-2 teams: the Utes, UW, and Oregon. There were a pair of 6-3 teams who contended for stretches of the season in Oregon State. And Matt, your Bruins, UCLA.
Yep.
So that added a lot of other intrigue. Utah, though, thanks to a whole litany of tiebreakers, basically their strength of schedule, they earned the right to play the title game. And Matt, you remember the outcome of that game, right?
Yeah, I do. It was a shellacking. They showed USC who's boss. And show them who what an actual defense looks like and what an actual run game looks like.
Yeah. That was also a season sweep for the Utes. They had beaten the Trojans a couple weeks earlier. So in all, the Pac-12 produced seven teams last year that made a bowl game. Six of them ended the year ranked. But as everyone knows, I'm a Big Ten guy. So taking from my conference, basketball, Big Ten basketball, very deep, tons of solid teams, but no real contender. Same thing for the Pac-12 football. It makes for a fun regular season, but fairly anticlimactic there in the title game. So these are five intriguing questions I have. These might not be yours. These might not be all our listeners, but Matt, these are the things that are jumping out to me. So feel free to chime in on any of them if you want. But my, there goes the Purdue train.
Boilermaker Express coming by.
Yeah. So intriguing question number one, this is obviously USC's last year in the Pac-12.
And UCLA.
Yeah, well, true. But only one of them has true playoff aspirations. So can USC finally hit that next rung? Second question, Oregon and Washington, a lot of recent success. Can either of them reclaim the crown?
I'm a lot more bullish on one than the other, and I'll let you know when we get there.
Number three, the Utes, we love them. Can they stay at such a high level despite there being a talent gap, just the way recruiting stuff works? And also, I mean, they should have a pretty big target on their back. They've won back-to-back Pac-12 title games. So they're going for the third in a row. So can they keep that high level up?
For my money, the best coach in the conference. So if you're someone who appreciates coaching and puts stock in coaching, I mean, you can't bet against Kyle Whittingham.
No, you cannot. Fourth question. Will there be a surprise title game appearance from one of those kind of tier two teams last year? Someone like Oregon State or UCLA, one of those teams I was kind of sniffing around. And finally, I mean, we can't avoid the obvious, which is Colorado, Coach Prime. What the heck will that transfer portal team look like?
51 transfers. 51 transfers, and I think, 23 fresh? I think it's like 84 new players on the team this year.
That's something.
I have thoughts on Colorado that we'll get to when we get to Colorado.
Yeah. All right. So we're just going to go top to bottom. These, as Matt said at the top, these are my personal standings. This is doing something a little bit different. Matt, he got promoted. Shout out to Matt. Super busy. Coaches camp. He's at Austin Peay. He's not even in Nashville right now.
Yep, he's in Clarksville.
To work with this. So these are just me. We'll see how it goes.
Let's do it.
All right. So number one, I got the Trojans. They've got possibly the best recruiting class. I know them in Oregon. Kind of depends on which you're looking at. Then they add that with a really stacked lineup coming back, including the obvious Heisman Trophy champion, the defending champ, Caleb Williams. Really no reason to expect USC not to have a strong campaign. The concerns are all defensive. And those were exposed kind of often during last year's late collapse in the title game to Utah or the bowl game to Tulane. So, Perka, with that in mind, why is defensive coordinator Alex Grinch still employed?
He has incriminating photos of Lincoln Riley. that is literally the only way I can imagine. I don't think he's had a top 80 defense in four or five seasons with Riley. And I think he's entering his fifth season as Lincoln Riley's defensive coordinator. I think Alex Grinch had like one really good year at Washington State with Mike Leach. And he's been riding the coattails of that for more than a half decade at this point. Because I don't understand. Alex Grinch's defenses are incapable of making adjustments. And that's why you saw them blow the lead against Tulane. That's why you saw them struggle with Utah. I mean, it's amazing to me how little professional developmental growth Grinch has done. Like, Josh, you're a teacher. Coach is a teacher. I used to work in academia. Professional development is mandatory, except when you're
one earlier today
coordinator. Because he's either regressing or I don't know. I'm not entirely sure. I'm not entirely sure why he has a job. I don't know if you are the brass at US and you're forking over all this money to Lincoln Riley and you've got all this hullabaloo around the program. Yes, one of my favorite words, hullabaloo. also great 1960s variety show. And you're letting Alex Grinch, who seems an adequate recruiter and a less than defensive coordinator.
Do you need an adequate recruiter when you're USC and Lincoln Riley?
Well, so see, you took the words right out of my mouth, Josh. Do you like, what is he bringing to the table? And the answer is, I really don't know at this point. I really don't know. The offense, they're going to be great again. Of course, they're going to be great on offense, but the defense has, I don't know. They still have as many question marks to me as they did last year. And last year's was no great shakes.
Well, we will, we'll probably circle back to USC when we tie a bow on this conference, but let's move to who I have second, contending with USC, facing off against them in the title game. And some people are going to be a little surprised. I got Oregon State. Let me repeat that. Oregon State, not Oregon.
The team in Corvallis.
The Beavers. And hear me out. I got a couple of reasons for this. Number one, they get to have the privilege of avoiding USC in the regular season. So right away, avoiding the big test. Three of their four toughest games are Utah, UCLA, and Washington. Those are all in Corvallis.
Tough place to play.
They have an outstanding offensive line. Probably the best in the league. And their quarterback, they're welcoming in Big Cinco from Clemson. And obviously he was hit or miss with the Tigers, but he's a big improvement for that position for the Beavers, who won 10 games last year with almost zero passing game. Their defense is admittedly going to be pretty new. But unlike Alex Grinch, Trent Bray was a great defensive coordinator last year. I don't think their defense will like fall off a crazy cliff. So, Matt, I'm basing a lot of this pick on those big uglies up front. Am I showing too much love to offensive line strength?
I don't think you are. I think there are two things that go along with that, however. Offensive line play in the Pac-12 has never been necessarily like a harbinger of being like the best team with the best offensive line means that you are going to be the best program. Like in the Big Ten and the SEC, offensive line play really, really, really matters. It matters in every game of football, but I'm not sure it matters as much. B, for me, Oregon State is the team with the highest variance of any team in this conference. You could tell me that they finished second, finish first, I'd be like, yeah, I can see that. You could also tell me like they finished ninth, and I'd be like, yeah, I can see that, because, you know, Big Cinco playing with the weapons that he had at Clemson, or as some people say, Clemson with a P in there, with, you know, struggled at times. Now what's he going to do with, I don't want to say second rate, because these guys are like second rate, but no, not 4 and 5 star targets to throw to. I think a lot of the issues he faced at Clemson were schematic. And he was so deep inside of his own head by the second half of last season that a fresh start was completely warranted. It's completely warranted. So I have, you know, I have no issues there. I don't have them finishing second, but I do have them finishing in the top four.
All right. Well, this next team, my third place team, they are the more popular pick. Are they your pick, Matt, Washington?
They are my pick to be not number two, but number one.
Oh, hey-o. All right. Well, for those of you wondering about UW, they have an outstanding offense. They have quarterback Michael Penix back. They have a bunch of killer receivers, Rome Odunze, Jalen McMillan. Their pass defense last year was terrible. so will that be improved enough? And then also, unlike Oregon State, they have three brand new starters on that offensive line. So Penix enjoyed amazing protection last year. He was sacked just 5 times.
Yeah. Incredible number
there. Yeah. They have an incredible defensive player back, though, in Braylon Trice. He's nasty. Yeah. So, but you got them number one. Tell me about
it. I have them number one on the back of Penix, the second year under Kalen DeBoer, who I think you know, after Whittingham, I think DeBoer might be the best coach. If when you take everything into account, he can do more with less. He wins. Kalen DeBoer just wins. And what matters, he won at freaking, what was it, Sioux Falls in South Dakota, NAIA. He lost like two games in 4 years there. He goes, you know, he's an amazing offensive coordinator, Indiana, goes to Fresno State, he wins, goes up to Washington, he wins. That offense is, I would not be surprised if they're putting up 42, 43 points a game. Ooh. I think that they are going to lead the country, at least the Power Five in offense this year. And I think that they will get up early enough to let Braylon Trice just get out there and tee off and get after quarterbacks like he does best. I've got them going 11-1 this year.
All righty. I like it. Fourth place, I got a team that we love, Utah.
Of course.
You and I both love Utah.
Always. Always.
They should be in the Big Ten. They're really secretly a Big Ten team. Utah, Oregon, they were tough teams to kind of split. The reason I'm taking the Utes over Oregon is their defensive bona fides are just superior to Oregon. Utah also has that reliable ground and pound game. But obviously Cam Rising, he tore his ACL in that Rose Bowl last year, while Oregon, of course, has a healthy Bo Nix. Utah's schedule is hellish. They have a really nasty non-conference slate. They also have a road trip to Seattle, a road trip down to Los Angeles for the Coliseum. And then obviously where title dreams go to die, which is Corvallis. So, Matt, which is scarier to look at if you are a diehard Utes fan, Rising's health or that schedule?
The schedule. I'm not as worried about Rising's health because they have a run game. Utah always has a run game, and it's the offense is not entirely incumbent on Rising to be Penix or Caleb Williams in order to click. They can hand the ball off 35 times a game and be just fine and play Big Ten football if they want to. For me, it's the schedule that, like you mentioned, Josh, it is brutal. That game in Seattle is going to be a really tough one. They're at the Coliseum and, like you said, like in Corvallis, all of these places, if they can go 1-2 isn't bad in there. If they manage to go 2-1, that's really good. You can never, ever, ever count Utah out. Like I said earlier, Kyle Whittingham's the best coach in the Pac-12. Yeah. And for me, it's a clear delineation between Whittingham and everybody else. And because of that, like, I'm not as worried about Rising. I am just more worried about that schedule.
Fair enough. All right, fifth place, the Ducks. So let's start with the positives. They've got seven starters back on defense. They've got great skill position core. But you know what? USC has a nice skill position core. Washington has that. Utah has that. What worries me about Oregon, four new starters on that offensive line, which pretty much leads all the contenders. They also have a road trip to Seattle, a road trip to Salt Lake City, and then they host USC. So I kind of know why I have Oregon as the odd man out this year. I just sort of listed why. Matt, I'm curious why you feel the same.
I feel the same way because they lost Kenny Dillingham. And he's an offensive mastermind. And I don't think that – I don't see Bo Nix having that same season that he did again last year, like he did last year. Add that to the problems on the offensive line, 8-4.
Yeah, could be.
I mean, 7-5 wouldn't shock me. 8-4, like I see them as a little bit. You know, you have them fifth, sixth feels about right for the Ducks. Yeah, they have super high end. I mean, you look at, you know, we talked about Big Cinco, his little brother Mateo Uyunglele, true freshman. Going to be a heck of an edge rusher, but I don't know how much he's going to be able to contribute as a freshman. They've got a really good defensive lineman in Brandon Dorlus up there, who's one of the best in the country. But like, on besides that, I don't know. I worry about no Dillingham, and I worry about some of the other, you know, little things just around the edges.
I heard that Big Cinco's brother tried to petition the NCAA to wear number 2.5, but they didn't let
him. Heyo.
All right.
I want someone to wear double zeros. I want someone to wear double zeros. I want like old school Robert Parrish.
Love that. Number six, pretty much smack dab in the middle because there's 12 teams in the Pac-12. I do not have them as a contender. It's the Bruins for me. I got UCLA sixth. Matt, this is one of your teams. I'll let you have the floor. Tell us all about the Bruins.
This is one of my teams. Josh, if Oregon State has the most variance in my mind, UCLA is right behind them at number two. They have a ton of transfers they are counting on to contribute. We're not exactly sure who's going to end up taking first team snaps. It's a three-man competition with Ethan Garbers, who played mop-up duty last year, you know, played when DTR would get injured occasionally, but had some amazing throws, had some really bad interceptions. Kent State transfer Colin Schley is the guy I would imagine ends up taking is the opening day starter, but true freshman Dante Moore, five-star quarterback, and, you know, he was the number one quarterback in high school, according to some recruiting services, comes to UCLA, flips from Oregon to UCLA right at the end of the recruiting process. Huge upside there, huge upside with Moore. They're counting on, you know, they lost Zach Charbonnet. Charbonnet was one of the best running backs, not just in the conference, but in the country over the last 2 years. They've brought in another MAC transfer, Carson Steele. Carson Steele has the name of a porn star and the look of a porn star. If you've seen, he's got these long flowing blonde locks that come out behind him when he is running. It's quite a sight to behold. He's a bully. When he was playing he is a bully from Ball State. And, you know, he looks really good, an all-MAC player. But again, step up to the competition in the Pac-12. Also on offense, I mean, two new starting receivers. J. Michael Sturdivant, not a lawyer, actually a wide receiver. Kyle Ford coming over from USC, new starting tight end. Moliki Matavayo coming down from Oregon. You're looking at a new starting left tackle coming in from Old Dominion. On the defensive side of the ball, I love the front seven. Like, I absolutely love their front seven. And I think the front seven is going to be why they can contend. You look at the Murphy twins. You look at one of my favorite pass rushers in the entire Pac-12, Laiti Latu. Laiti Latu. I'm going to pronounce that name correctly at some point. He had 10.5 sacks last season. I could see him getting even more. Super deep linebacking core. Back end of the defense is where I would worry. You know, so for the Bruins, like, how quickly can Chip Kelly get all of these new pieces on the same page? Because we know that, like, yeah, Chip's system can be super effective, but it's not the easiest one to learn. It's really not. It's not a, you know, plug and play system like you see a lot of these spreads. There's a lot more verbiage. There is a lot more, motions, just stuff you have to get up to speed on. And that can be tough for transfers. We've seen guys come in and do it. I don't know. Six feels right. The homer in me wants to say they'll finish top four, but I feel like sixth feels about right for the Bruins this fall. But again, huge variance for this team.
All right, so as we get to the back end, we'll speed things up a little bit. Going to group the two next teams, Arizona 7, Washington State 8. I really, really, really liked what Wazoo did last year, but I'm flipping these two clubs due to the returning personnel. Obviously, Arizona receiver Jacob Singer transferred in conference over to USC, but they still boast a 1,000-yard receiver in Jacob Cowing. And Tetarillo McMillan had like 700 yards last year as a breakout freshman. So receiving core should still be pretty good. Quarterback Jaden DeLara, just a solid quarterback here at the college ranks, you know, did well.
Feels like he's been around forever, too. Like, yeah. I feel like it's his third year starting at Arizona. Yeah. He started for a couple of years up at Washington State. I mean, like, you know, he feels like he's been around at least since the Obama administration, if not the Bush administration.
The Arizona defense last year was awful. So really could only get better from there. They hit the portal pretty hard to try and boost up that side of the ball. And for Washington State, who I've got eighth, they got Cameron Ward, their quarterback. He's back And unfortunately, not much else. The top four receivers from last season hit the portal. But they did have the Pac-12's best defense last year. I don't know if people remember that. And they have some pretty key players back from that, including both of their edge rushers, Brennan Jackson and Ron Stone Jr. This combo added up a combined 22 and a half sacks last year and 42 and a half tackles for loss. So, Matt, we got the Cats, we got the Cougars, we got felines all over the field. Do I have them in the right order, or are you flipping either of these teams?
Yeah, I'm with you on being bullish on the Bear Downs under Jed Fish. I like the direction of the program under Fish. I think they are moving in the right direction, and I worry that Washington State is going to be a little bit stagnant. They,
I think both can still make a bowl personally.
Oh, I think they can both definitely make a bowl, but I don't see them competing with the upper echelon of the conference. If I was to guess, I think probably Arizona has a better chance at playing spoiler, against some of the top teams, unless, you know, it's a weird night game on the Palouse. And in that case, anything can happen. But I agree with you that Arizona should probably be ranked just a little bit ahead of Washington State.
All right, now we get to 9, which I have as Cal. And there's an old joke that I did not create. I've just like to tell it. And that old joke can apply to Cal. What's the good thing about Cal? They have 10 starters back. What's the bad thing about Cal? They have 10 starters back. About the only starter that really worth highlighting is their incredible linebacker, Jackson Sermon.
When was the last time they didn't have like an all-world linebacker? Is my
guess. I don't know, but yeah, don't be surprised if he's an All-American this year, even if Cal doesn't have a great season. They do have some interesting skill position talent. They have running back Jaden Ott back, who had a stellar season last year.
Yeah, he was a true freshman last year and had like a 260-yard game at one point. Like, he showed some real flashes. He's a kid I'm really high on.
Yep. They are, though, kind of starting a little bit from scratch offensively. They have a new offensive coordinator, and their opening day starter should be transfer quarterback Sam Jackson, the fifth, over from TCU. And then grouping two teams together because they're basically identical. So 10th and 11th, flip a coin, Arizona State and Colorado. They are literally the exact same story for both teams. They have brand new coaches. Deion Sanders, obviously, at Colorado, and Matt mentioned him earlier about his worries with Oregon. That's 33-year-old Kenny Dillingham down there, the splash hire for old Sparky. Both programs hit the portal pretty hard. Arizona State has 30 incoming transfers, and Colorado at one point had 71 players on their roster put their name in the portal. Obviously, some took them back out, but that was just an insane stat I saw. So obviously both teams are really trying to rebuild on the fly. We haven't seen any program hit the portal for that purpose before. So Matt, how does this play out in your opinion? Is this type of rebuild going to be just a complete flash in the pan? No team will ever do this again. Or will Arizona State or Colorado be a Pac-12 contender in a few years, or in Colorado's case, a Big 12 contender in a few years?
Arizona State has a much better chance of being a contender in the Pac-12 or the Big 12 than Colorado does. And here's why. I am beyond skeptical about the coach prime hullabaloo. Let me bring that term back again. Because What do we know wins in college football, Josh? It's culture. Coach has been preaching at culture at us since day one of this podcast. We hear all the successful programs talk about culture,
He preaches culture. Chunk plays, actually.
He also preaches chunk plays and good impressions. But culture wins. What is the culture that Deion Sanders is bringing in? It's one about boastfulness, brashness, and not actually caring about having a culture of the program. And I it's not even free agency bringing it around to Colorado. It's going to be not just much ado about nothing. I think there's a good chance Colorado starts 1-5. I think there's a really good chance that Colorado starts 1-5. And then what happens? And then what happens when they get smacked in the mouth and are, because here's the thing about Coach Prime, elite salesman, like one of the best salesmen we've seen. The talent advantage that he had at Jackson State versus the rest of the SWAC was so monumental that it didn't even matter how good of a coach, how good of an X's and O's coach he was.
So he's basically what? Nick Saban.
But he's Nick Saban without having any of the bona fides. Without any of the bona fides of having properly developed players. Right. And yeah. He's bringing in a bunch of transfers, but have we ever seen a team bring in this many new faces? No. Have we ever seen a team bring in half as many new faces? No. And so the smartest thing he did was he's brought in some good coordinators. He's got some good coordinators. Right. He's got my guy, Sean Lewis, who was the head coach at Kent State. Go Flashes. And who as his offensive coordinator, and Sean's an elite mind. Sean is there for 1 year. So even if things go well this year, he's going to be on. So many of these guys are going to be gone. And the NIL money and all these other tools that are all these other stuff that's coming into the program that's gassing them up right now. Well, what happens when they go 1-5? That money's going to start drying up real quick. And I see this having a much, much, much bigger chance of falling completely flat than I do seeing success from this team. I would be shocked if they made a bowl game. Shocked.
I would be too. Let's finish up the Pac-12 pecking order. I got Stanford, obviously, 12th. Stanford is a private university in Palo Alto, California, that used to be pretty good at football. And honestly, until Northwestern was forced to throw a brick of dynamite onto their program, thanks to Pat Fitzgerald being a little hazing happy there, I guess. I thought that this was the biggest rebuild in a power conference, even bigger than Colorado's, because obviously Colorado do a complete rebuild in a different way. But Stanford, they have a brand new coach, Troy Taylor, as well, but they have just six starters back, which is like a baffling low number.
Here's the question, Josh. In 3 years from now, do you think Stanford or Colorado will be in a better situation?
Well, one will be in the Big 12 and the other might be in the Mountain West. I don't know.
Okay. Well, still, which team would you think will be in a better situation 3 years from now as a program?
Probably Stanford.
Yeah, I think it's definitely Stanford. I think Troy Taylor is everything that Deion Sanders is not. Troy Taylor is a coaching lifer. Troy Taylor took Cal Poly to huge places. Troy Taylor's a freaking coach. Troy Taylor's already recruiting incredibly well. Stanford is one of the top 2024 recruiting classes already. Like, they're getting dudes all over the place. I'm way more bullish on the future of Stanford than I am the future of Colorado.
All right, let's do some quick accolades. I got USC over Oregon State. Matt, sounds like you have Washington.
I have Washington over USC.
All right. My offensive MVP, I got Caleb Williams.
Michael Penix Jr.
Okay. It was kind of a flip a coin there. My defensive MVP, I got Braylon Trice. Mentioned him earlier at Washington.
I've got Leyu Tulatu from UCLA.
Love it. My coach of the year, if I'm picking Oregon State to finish second, you know I'm going with Jonathan Smith.
And I'm obviously going with Kalen DeBoer.
All right, newcomer. I hate the recruiting stuff. I've mentioned before, I don't really care. When a freshman has a great season, that's fun, but I don't follow the charts the way you and Coach do. So I've got a newcomer, and this can be a freshman or it can be a transfer. It's sort of open-ended, however you want to interpret it. I got Big Cinco. I got DJ there at Oregon State.
Yeah, that's a really good one. I've got Bear Alexander at USC.
Nice. And first fired, you know, I think Cal and Arizona are probably going to be too good for Fisher or Wilcox to get canned. So my question for you, Matt, is UCLA has a pretty tough schedule. Let's say something crazy happens and the Bruins miss a bowl game. Do you think they clean house before jumping leagues?
No, they can't afford to. Fair enough. Like fiscally, they cannot afford to.
All right. Final thought, final question for the Pac-12. I said we'd circle back to USC. I have USC, you have Washington, the big picture. Does the Pac-12 have a team in the playoffs this year?
No.
Ooh. All right. Well, we're going to take a little break. Matt, do you have an ad read for us?
I did our ad read at top. I mean, I can.
We don't have a second ad break?
No, no second ad break today, Josh. We're just going to keep, I mean, I can just advertise, just keep listening to this podcast and, you know, and keep it up. So let's get on to the junior Pac-12.
Hey, that's pretty rude because the Mountain West is amazing. I love the Mountain West.
The Mountain West is amazing.
Yeah. Well, just like we did for the previous conference, I'll give you guys a quick recap in case you don't remember the season. So 2022 was really the Boise State and Fresno State show. Boise went 9-3 overall, but unblemished in conference. Fresno dealt with an unfortunate Jake Haener injury early on the season. So they only went 8-4 overall, but they were a solid 7-1 in the league. Once in the title game, Fresno, they avenged an earlier loss. So they got the ultimate revenge there on the Broncos. Both of them then would go on to win their bowl game. So despite a few bumps, the two top clubs finished a combined 20-8. Now, makes it sound like this was a pretty top-heavy league, but it was actually pretty deep. Air Force, they won 10 games, including their bowl. Wyoming, Utah State, and San Diego State all went bowling. And San Jose State got back to a bowl for the second time in 3 seasons, which for them is job well done. So my 5 questions for this league are, number 1, a lot of hype with Boise State. Are they back to their BCS busting days, or are they just a conference power?
They're a conference power.
All right. Definitive. Not even a flinch. Question 2. How does Fresno State look in their post Jake Haener world? Third question. Team that I love. I picked them to win the conference last year, Air Force. They've got a stellar defense. Is that enough to make them a title contender despite some new faces on offense? Number 4, San Jose State. Can they replicate what Fresno did in 2022, which is basically ride the best quarterback in the league? Because San Jose State, believe it or not, has, for my money, the best quarterback in the league. And then finally, well, I should say passing quarterback, because Boise, he's a little bit more of a dual threat guy. Had to clarify that. And 5th and final one, Utah State has been a really goofy team. They won 11 games 2 years ago, fell down to six wins just last year. So which Utah State team is going to emerge?
All right. Well, I have thoughts on a couple of those, but let's hop into the Mountain Division, Josh, where I can talk.
Yeah. All right. I got Boise winning the Mountain again. Their offense should be stacked. Basically, everyone is back, minus a couple starters on the offensive line. Their biggest issue is they've got several key defensive starters that they need to replace. I want to talk about their quarterback. I mentioned he's a dual threat guy. Talen Green, he had over 2,000 passing yards last year, nearly 600 rushing yards. He accounted for 24 touchdowns last season. But I don't think he's as well known as the Boise State quarterback that we all think of on the cover of a video game, Jared Zabransky. Matt, what will it take for Talen Green to be as remembered as the beloved Jared Zabransky?
win a New Year's Six Bowl.
Ooh.
I mean, that's what he has to do. I think what they have going for them is the fact that they have as good a three-headed monster running the ball. You talk about Jalen Green, George Helani, Ashton Jeanty, two really good backs. They are the favorite in this conference for a reason. I think that they're really well balanced. Defense is really solid. Little bit worried about the back end of the defense, but I think up front they're solid. You know, I think they're going to be able to ground and pound teams when they want to, which will be really, really nice for them. They should be the favorite. That doesn't mean that I will necessarily be picking them to win it all. I think they're going to win the Mountain Division. I'll say that.
All right.
But I think this team is going to be really, really good. I just don't think that they are at the level of some of those, Josh, you mentioned the Power Five upsetters, the BCS Bowl upsetters. I don't think they're at that level again.
All right. My second team in the division is Air Force. And honestly, if they were in the West Division, they would probably be the title game. Their defense, the Air Force defense, was stupid good last year. They gave up just 13.4 points per game, and they held their opponents to just 27.4% third down conversion rate. They have eight starters back from that defense.
They're really good.
They're
really good.
Yeah. Their big issue is their incredible quarterback, Ahzeke Daniels, no longer running that triple option. So breaking in a new quarterback, never easy for any type of offense, but especially one with so much timing and so many reads for that triple option. The good thing is, though, for that offense, four offensive line starters back.
Yeah, I like the Falcons just like you do, like that defense. But like you said, no Ahzeke Daniels really worries me. That's why, that's why I think it's going to keep them away from, you know, winning the division.
All right, I got third place Wyoming. And Wyoming's been a weird team. They have not had a breakthrough season to win the division under Craig Bull, yet they are really consistent. They have won at least six games every year since 2016, other than the shortened COVID year. If there's ever a time for Wyoming to break through, this might be the year. They have 15 starters back, including 10 on a defense that was also already pretty stingy, not quite Air Force level, but a pretty dang good last year. The thing for the Cowboys is they've got to get that passing game going. Their returning starting quarterback, Andrew Peasley, he put up almost 1,600 yards.
That's not very good.
And 10 touchdowns, Matt.
It's not very good.
And 9 interceptions.
Also not very good.
I've got some comps to put those numbers into perspective. That 1,600 yards, 1,600 passing yards, that is fewer yards than Iowa's Spencer Petras. Those 10 touchdowns are fewer touchdowns than Indiana's Connor Bazelak. And those 9 interceptions were more than Washington's Michael Penix Jr.,
who I believe had the most attempts in all of college football last year, second to Austin Reed.
Penix attempted 300 more passes than Andrew Peasley. So that passing game has got to get going.
Josh Matt, Allen ain't walking through that door.
Matt, you loved Wyoming last year. You actually picked them.
I picked them to win the conference last year.
Yeah. How do you see things playing out?
I think that their defense will be on par with Air Force. But God, Craig Bohl, great coach, love Craig Bohl. But they need to find a running attack to do something about the passing attack, because I don't see it getting any better. And so they need to have a more sustainable run game if they are going to break through. Like, they can. Like, I genuinely believe that they can. But in the same division as Boise, and it's, I don't want to say it's Spider-Man meme with Air Force, but like crazy good defense, crazy bad, not crazy bad offense, but like, you know, I mean, triple option is one thing, but I wonder sometimes if a program like a Wyoming either needs to go like full spread air raid or full triple option in order to really be successful, because I don't know if what they are running can get them to be at the level of a Boise State.
So you're advocating Wyoming goes back to the Joe Tiller days?
Pretty much, actually.
There we go.
I mean, I'm nothing against that. I mean, just throw it around. I mean, if you're going to throw it that poorly, at least throw it a lot and make it fun.
All right. Well, kind of stuck in the middle, I got Utah State. And as mentioned in my questions, this team won the freaking league 2 years ago and then flat out stunk last year. I saw them play my Hawkeyes. And let's just say Iowa had no sweat in that game. Utah State scored 22 points per game last year.
And that's not great.
They gave up 31 per.
That's worse.
The defense was raided by the portal. Their offensive coordinator, despite those numbers, left for Indiana.
Indiana. I can't wait to get to our Big Ten preview. Indiana is such a dumpster fire. And it would be the worst in the Big Ten if it wasn't for Northwestern.
Yeah. And then, they chose not to replace him because head coach Blake Anderson is now calling the plays. So it honestly speaks to just how bad 5 and 6 are. That the Aggies came in fourth. If you're looking for a silver lining, quarterback Cooper Lagasse and running back Robert Briggs are back. And so they have a nice backfield, but that's really about the only silver lining I have.
Shout out to my guy, Al Ashford, the transfer corner from Wisconsin, who should be starting for them this fall. He's a guy who I think didn't quite get a fair shake at Wisconsin and could be an all Mountain West Conference player in his first year. So that is why I will be watching those games in Logan, because you know, Al's my guy. I love that kid, and so wishing the best things for him. But I am definitely worried about that team, but not as much as I'm worried about the two teams you're about to talk about.
All right, well, let's get into Colorado State. I got them fifth, and there's no putting any lipstick on this pig, Matt. Their offense was god awful last year.
That's being generous.
They mustered 13.2 points per game. And what's really weird is they actually have some really talented players highlighted by their wide receiver, Torrey Horton.
They've always got receivers. They've always got receivers.
Torrey Horton, he had 1,100 yards last year. But the problem was the offensive line gave up nearly 60 sacks.
That's a lot.
And the running game averaged under 3 yards per carry.
5 sacks a game, less than 3 yards per carry is, I mean, that is just levels of ineptitude that would make the 1970s Northwestern Wildcats blush.
And like, I mean, Horton's awesome, but I just, maybe I'm spoiled by Brian Ferentz, but I don't conceptually understand how you build an offense around one good wide receiver.
I mean, it's basically what the Vikings do with Justin Jefferson. I don't know.
There we go. The defense was actually surprisingly good last year. So I know some Rams fans are probably thinking they flip spots with Utah State, but yeah, that's them. So Matt, I want to ask you a question. You played a little bit of Lion back in the day up in New Hampshire.
Yes, sir.
And, well, you watch the Badgers all the time. I do. So you kind of break down offensive line play.
I love offensive line play.
What goes wrong when you have an offensive line that's a sieve like Colorado State was last year?
No communication. Just complete lack of communication between the 5 players on the offensive line. They're not on the same page. Either they're missing calls, they're missing checks at the line of scrimmage. And even if you don't have the athletes, the strength, the guys with all the size, if you communicate as a line, you can at least be a little bit above mediocre, right? If you can at least get all of your bodies in the right place, moving in the right direction, like even if you're not all Joe Thomas, even if you're not all, I don't know, choose your Iowa offensive lineman. Robert Gallery, sure. why not? You know, Marshall Yanda. Like, you know, even if
that's hometown, Marshall Yanda.
I know. But you can at least put your body in the way when you are not communicating as a line. That is when things really happen, because two guys go to block the same person and leave someone else completely untouched. And that's what's been happening at Colorado State. It's just complete lack of communication along the offensive line. And if I was the offensive line coach there, literally all I would be doing is working on their communication, making sure that they are all on the same page on every single snap, because there were way too many times last year that they clearly were not.
Obviously not. And rounding things out, dead last for the Mountain Division, we got New Mexico. And amazingly, the Lobos somehow had a worse offensive statistically than Colorado State. They return on their defense, not one, not two. That's it. Actually, just two starters. I mean, this team, like, I don't even know where you begin. We'll probably talk a little bit more about them when we get to the first fired section.
I literally have nothing to add on the Lobos because that program is dumpster fire-rific.
Yeah. So let's jump over to the West. Winning the West, I got Fresno State. And yeah, you know, who's gone from last year's team? Obviously, we know. Jake Haener. Who else is out? Their amazing wide receiver, Jalen Moreno. Cropper, but you got to look at actually who's back. I know it's easy in these previews to talk about who's gone, but who's back? They got seven starters on a defense that gave up just 19.4 points per game. They have a wizard of a coach in Jeff Tedford, and they have one of the key transfers really in all of the group of five, maybe, I think.
Definitely within the conference.
Yeah, this is a big transfer. They have UCF quarterback Mikey Keene. And for those of you who were not up on UCF season last year, let's just say it was a classic Gus Bus season where he didn't know who he wanted his quarterback to be.
Was it Keene? Was it John Reese Plumlee? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he spurriered that situation with the best of them.
Yeah. So Keene kept rotating in and out. And all told, he appeared in just four games last year with one start. But in those four games, he put up 647 yards. He connected on 60 out of 83 passes. He had six touchdowns and just one interception. So if you assume that, okay, he keeps those slashes up for a full season, multiply it out, that's over 2,500 yards, 24 touchdowns, and just four interceptions. So theoretically, this is one of the biggest quarterback transfers. And he's going right into a great position with the Tedford. So, Matt, I got them winning this division. I think you have them winning the conference again. So I have a feeling you're agreeing with me on this situation.
You're wrong. I don't have them winning the division.
Whoa. San Jose State?
You know it.
Ooh, let's get to San Jose State then. All right. Sorry, Fresno.
I am so far into the Spartan bandwagon this year.
Yeah. Gosh,
it is not funny. So now, unfortunately for Spartan fans, you saw what happened when I went all in on Wyoming last year.
Yeah.
So sorry, but I just like, I have like, if
Jeff Garcia
Jamie Cordero is pouring the Kool-Aid, I am drinking all of it. Like, I have two hands on the glass and I'm just shoving it down my throat.
Jeff Garcia just angrily turned off the podcast.
Oh, sorry, Jeff.
All right. Well, I got San Jose State finishing second. I think them and actually the Aztecs are kind of a coin flip, but I went with the Spartans since you mentioned them, their quarterback. I like their quarterback better. Chevin Cordero, he had over 3,200 yards last year, 23 touchdowns. His primary target is gone, but options two and three from last season should easily slide up to one and two. His line is one of the most experienced in the league. They also have six starters back on defense. If I had one worry about the team, it'd actually be their schedule. Their crossover games are Air Force and a trip up to Boise.
Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, and then in the non-conference, they actually have USC and Oregon State. But yeah, it's like I said, best passing quarterback in the league, mm-hmm. and that's what Fresno used last year with Haener.
I think he's the best quarterback with full stop. I don't say best corner. It's just best quarterback in the league is Chevin Cordero. I think he is. We'll get there, but he's my offensive MVP for the conference. He's my overall MVP for the conference, and they are going to ride his back to a West Division title.
All right. The last of the contenders is San Diego State.
Yep.
And the Aztecs were really up and down offensively. They're banking on their quarterback, Jalen Maiden. He played much better week 7 through 12 than he did 1 through 6. So they're hoping to build on that. Defensively, as you'd expect with a Brady Hoke team, they were tough as nails. They gave up just 20.5 points per game. I've thrown a lot of defensive numbers at you, so where does that stack up? That's 19th best nationally. Now, they only have two starters back on that defense, but like I said, they got Brady Hoke there. They got that institutional knowledge, so that unit should be relevant. Like the Spartans, pretty nasty schedule. They have the exact same crossover games, Boise and Air Force, but they also have a trip to the Bay Area to take on San Jose. So, Matt, I already know where you're standing. You've got San Jose State win the division. So, can San Diego State get higher than third for you?
Can they? Yes.
Will they?
Will they? No. No, okay. I've got them finishing third just because I love San Jose State this year. And so, I think that, yes, I mean, the house money on Fresno. I think Fresno, Jeff Tedford, obviously amazing coach. And so I think that they've got, Fresno has the coach, probably has the quarterback over San Diego State, which is why I would put, I don't see them jumping them there. So coach and quarterback, I think out of those three contenders, if you add those two elements up, I think they're a clear third out of three.
That's fair. All right. 4 through 6, you can basically all clump them together. They have the exact same issue. Now, I have them stacked up UNLV, Hawaii, Nevada. But like I said, mix and match any of them because they have the same problem. And that is their defenses last year were all horrific. So UNLV, no surprise there. They've basically had a bad defense for about a decade now. But they do bring in Barry Odom, new head coach. Background in defense. Maybe that helps them. We'll see. Hawaii, they were dead last in the league defensively last year. They gave up almost 35 points per game. And, you know, Nevada, no slouch. They gave it a good go. They gave up 31 points a game last year. Nevada does have 6 starters back, so maybe that helps them in some way. I don't know. I mentioned UNLV as a new coach. Hawaii and Nevada, not that far behind. Their coaches are entering their second years at the program. So all three are basically in the exact same spot. Rebuilding, new coaches. Odom's had head coaching experience from Missouri, but this is obviously his first year. Hawaii's changing their offenses to a more run and shoot like they had when head coach Timmy Chang was their quarterback. And then Nevada just, they lost 10 straight games last year. So they're basically at rock bottom. So that's why I've got UNLV, Hawaii, Nevada in that pecking order. Matt, which of this trio of uncertainty do you like to, you know, break through a little bit, get to maybe 4 or 5 wins?
I trust one of these coaches, and that coach is Barry Odom. So, yeah, I mean, it would have to be UNLV, even though, I mean, I think Hawaii might have the most talent on the roster, but I think UNLV has the best coach. And Hawaii's travel is always going to be a strike against them. Like, I don't care how many home games they get. Like, flying back and forth to the mainland that often is not easy. It's not easy on the body. Like, I just went, I just went out to LA for a weekend for a quinceañera. And even that, flying from Nashville to LA, yes, I'm a 37-year-old man with a bad back, but still, even if you're a young person, it still sucks to have to fly in, get acclimated, play. Like, it's never going to be easy. So I like UNLV on the back of Barry Odom. I think Nevada, if New Mexico weren't in this conference, Nevada would be the worst team, but New Mexico exists. Ergo, they're the second worst team. Like, I think Jay Norvell upgraded by leaving Nevada for Colorado State a little over a year ago. And I'm not going to lie, man. Like, it's tough times there in Reno. Tough times.
It is. At least they have some beautiful scenery and some casinos to go to. Let's fly through those accolades. I got Boise State over Fresno State. You got San Jose winning the whole shebang.
No, I've got Boise State over San Jose.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough.
As much as I love San Jose State, Boise State has the talent. I really like Andy Avalos as a coach, and I think that they're too well balanced offensively and are just too solid defensively to not be the favorite.
Well, we're still going to give San Jose State a little bit of love because we're unanimous with our offensive MVP, right?
For sure. Cordero. No. Absolutely.
No. Yeah. All right. My defensive MVP, I decided to be really lazy and I just put somebody from Air Force.
I'll take Easton Gibbs, the linebacker out of Wyoming. I think Gibbs could end up with like 140 or 150 tackles this year.
That's a few.
I think he's an absolute stud. So give me Easton Gibbs.
All right. Well, I have Air Force winning probably 8, 9, 10 games again. And with a brand new quarterback, I think that's going to get a lot of love for Troy Calhoun to be the coach of the year.
Brent Brennan for me. If they're able to win the division, I think it's Brent Brennan.
All right. My newcomer, obviously, if I have them in the title game, I'm going to have Mikey Keene.
Yeah, I'm not going to disagree with you there.
All right. My first fired, it's got to be Danny Gonzalez, the New Mexico coach. So he is entering his fourth season, and the Lobos are 7-24, 3-20 under
him.
That's
not good, Josh. That's not good.
And he's a former player, so I know why they've given him the long leash. But I ran through their schedule, Matt, and we don't have time to do the Mad Dog thing for this show. We'll save that for other shows. But I ran through it, and I see really just two guaranteed wins. So let's say they go 2-10.
I'm surprised you found two.
Well, I think there's some FCS in there.
I think they play UMass, too. I'm just assuming that they play UMass. Yeah. Oh, no. UMass plays New Mexico State. I don't know if they play who knows. Either way.
But anyway, let's say they go 2-10. Even former player, native son, 2-10 would bring him to 9-34.
Good grief.
3-28 in conference.
And it's really bad.
So I really think Danny Gonzalez probably not surviving. Do you have anyone else on the chopping block for this conference?
If Utah State falls off, Blake Anderson.
Ooh.
Yeah, he hasn't been there for like super long, but that's a program we've seen be very successful recently. And I think I think they expect more in Logan, quite frankly. I really genuinely believe that they think that they are an upper echelon Mountain West program. And that
I mean, they see their in-state rivals doing it. So, yeah.
I mean, they see every year Utah killing it. They see BYU being very good almost every single year. And you know, yeah, they're the little brother to them, but they don't view themselves like the little brother. And hell, even Weber State is good at the FCS level. I mean, if you're talking about winning in the state of Utah, they're number four right now. And so it would not surprise me. Let's say things completely nosedive this year, right? Not able to get a real offense going. You know, the head coach taking over play calling just doesn't work. Yeah, I think Blake Anderson would probably be my second choice there.
Okay. All right, final thoughts. This was my question for the league, and I think I know your answer, but I just want to think it through a little bit more. So Boise State opens with Washington. Probably going to lose. But the rest of their way, very real chance they're favored in all of those games. So let's say they go.
Hold on, Josh. You said we're going to do it right now. Dog. Week two, home for UCF.
And Gus Bus taking Boise.
That's going to be close. Week three, home for North Dakota.
Boise.
At San Diego State.
It's the Coyotes, not the Bison.
The Coyotes.
Yeah.
At San Diego State.
Just not enough offense. I don't trust San Diego State.
At Memphis.
I have no idea what Memphis is going to look like this year.
I mean, they're a Power 5 program now, Josh.
Memphis?
Aren't they? No. Aren't they in the Big 12? Oh, no, they're not in the Big 12 now. Never
they were left out of the Big 12.
They were left out of the Big 12. That's right. They're still an American Conference program.
You don't just stroll into the Liberty Bowl and expect to win. No, I've got Boise.
Home for my fighting Spartans, Javon Cordero and them boys.
The Smurf turf, they're going to be favored.
At Colorado State.
Colorado State can't score.
Home for Wyoming.
Wyoming can't score.
At Fresno State.
That's probably their toughest.
That's going to be under the lights in Fresno, November 4th.
I know it's Tedford, but that smells like a Pat Hill type game.
Home for New Mexico. What's the spread on that one?
35.
Yeah. At Utah State, we've discussed Utah State at nauseum, and then they finished their season at home for Air Force. I could see them not being favorites against UCF, who is a Power 5 program now. And maybe, depending on how things go, that Fresno State game.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so here's the crux of it. So let's say they go 12-1.
Yeah.
Win the conference. Their one loss is week one, Washington. They've had all this time to build this momentum.
Especially if it's my Washington team that ends up, winning the Pac-12.
The question I had was, are they back to being a BCS buster? Would that 12-1, 12 straight wins, conference title, would that get them back into the Big Bowl as the highest ranked Group of Five team? I mean, their competition, you're looking at Tulane. I mean, most of the usual suspects have been poached, you know, like
UCF.
Yeah. I mean, Cincinnati,
I think
off to the Big 12. So
I think Tulane is the big one for me, because Michael Pratt isn't just the best Group of Five quarterback. He's just one of the best quarterbacks in the country, full stop. And so I think that, I still think I'd place Tulane ahead of them in terms of BCS Buster Group of Five teams. Besides that, though, there's not a whole lot else that I think you can really take. I don't know if there's another team that. Yeah, I think it's really them and Tulane are probably the two big ones, unless, you know, we see a program come out of nowhere. I mean, you never know. I mean,
San Antonio, maybe meet.
Yeah, that was when I was thinking of. You can never count out App State, and that's really
your boy Jim Mora, but Connecticut.
Sorry, I don't see that one happening, guys. You know, I mean, good for them. You know. Good for them to get back on the horse last year, but
your boy Dino Babers up there at Syracuse.
They're effectively a Group of Five team.
That was the joke. I'm glad you picked up on that.
All right. Well, I think that is going to do it for us here tonight on our first of our conference preview shows here for the 2023 season. Josh, can't believe we are starting our ninth season here on Illegal Motion. It's been a quite the ride, and we got a lot more to come. We'll be back next time with the Big 12?
Big 12, and due to the conference realignment, the closest conference to pair them with is weirdly CUSA.
CUSA.
Yeah, because they've shifted rather far to the west with some of their teams.
They really have.
Yeah, bunch of Texas teams, New Mexico State, so fun times in CUSA.
Yeah, I'm here for all of it. I'm here for all of it. So, okay, well, that is going to do it for us.
And depending on how camp goes, Coach will be here for some of it.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Shout out to Coach, by the way. Coach is now coaching at one of the elite private schools here in Tennessee, Ensworth. For any of you guys who know anything about Middle Tennessee football, Ensworth is a power program, and Coach is now running tight ends and fullbacks for them, and is the JV offensive coordinator. And it's I'm really happy for him. It's a great gig. It's a really great gig. I'm excited for him. Their team is up at Austin Peay right now for team training camp. So, he's in the thick of it at the moment. But, you know, shout out to you, Coach. And we'll be back next time with the coach. So that's going to do it for us here today on the Illegal Motion College Football Podcast, brought to you by BetOnline.ag and MikeFarrellSports.com. So until next time, on behalf of our second amigo, or our third amigo in the second city. I don't know. It's been a minute since I did this, Josh. Third amigo in the second city. Josh,
too busy running naked drills at Evanston.
Hey-o.
We know what you do on the weekend. Perv.
Whoa there. Whoa. I might do some weird things. I cannot deny.
I gotta go to the car wash. That's what you texted me the other day. You said you gotta go to the car wash,
Josh. I want nothing to do with anything that is happening at Northwestern on their football program, their baseball program, women's softball program, or anything.
Volleyball, all cheerleaders.
Of all of it. Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
School ACC commissioner.
The only thing good coming out of there right now is a journalism school. So, which is who rooted all this out. So, anyhow, he's Josh. I'm Perko. We'll be back next time on the Legal Motion College Football Podcast.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.